Joining us now is Rav Aaron Lopiansky. Rav Lopiansky is the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva of Greater Washington, Tiferes Gedalia. He's a prolific author. He has written over 20 Sfarim, including what we can call the Book of the Year, which fills an unbelievably necessary void, the Ben Torah for Life. Rav Lopiansky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, and Yasher Koach for your work. Make it work. Both the men edition and the women's special needs really fills a lacuna in the world of halacha, and Be'ez Hashem, people should be able to get a lot of tells out of it.
Thank you so much. So, Rav Lopiansky, I'd like to start as follows. Your sefer, Ben Torah for Life, it focuses on the decision to go from kolel to the workplace, and it also discusses in depth and detail the related transition and the challenges of the transition. There's an excellent chapter on integrity, and the topic of integrity in the workplace is very broad. And I'll just cite a few examples that come to mind. Using your time at work when you're on salary, are you allowed to answer when your child calls or something comes up, or to respond to an email that's personal in nature? Using office supplies for personal use, and some very serious issues of proper disclosure. Somebody's trying to raise money for a business or get a loan. What can I expense to the company? What's reimbursable? What's on me? What's on them? Disclosures on an interview, and this is not even to mention payment of taxes, which we won't get into. So the typical yeshiva bachur, the avreich in kolel, the girl in seminary, doesn't deal with these issues growing up until really they get out to work. So what I'd like to discuss initially is, on a practical level, how does someone prepare for these monetary responsibilities, whether the person is going to a secular workplace, a Hamish workplace, working in a yeshiva, a religious institution? The person probably had no exposure to these issues, and in fact, they may have grown up in a family or an environment where people were lax about monetary responsibilities and how they dealt with others, cutting corners, playing financial games. So I guess my first question is twofold. If somebody is unprepared, is this a difficult transition? And number two, if so, how does somebody prepare for it?
So I think you touched, obviously, on a very, very important topic. Let me give a parallel which pales in comparison, but it's still, people will understand what's being done, and maybe you can apply it. People grow up in a yeshiva environment. People are nice to each other. People are friendly. Chesed is spoken about and things like that. But marriage, no one knows what the underpinnings of married life is like. For many years, it was never spoken about. And in the last decades, it has become a whole an establishment where you have people giving chas and chala classes of varying levels of sophistication. But it's understood that just because he's a nice guy and she's a nice girl, putting them together will have a lot of problems that will come up that they're not prepared with, because being nice in a dorm environment and being nice in a family is two separate environments. So just like we put that into place because we understand how it's almost impossible to guess the issues, and we avoid a lot of problems by preparing them, we need to do the same here also. It's a lot more complex. Yes, there are many differences. First of all, a bachur gets married when he's a bachur. So he's in the yeshiva environment. He has clear rebbeim. And his Rosh Yeshiva / Rebbe, you can sit him down and say, okay, now we're going to do a series of chassid classes. When a person makes the transition from kol to workplace, usually most kolim, the Rosh Kolel is either just a managing figure or maybe only devoted to learning. He's not a Rebbe figure anymore. So who will prepare those shiurim? Secondly, every Rosh Yeshiva or anybody giving a chassid class is married as well. So he has at least, you know, some. He has a personal feel for it. In business, if the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rav, Rebbe, never had real exposure to the business world, he's also clueless. I mean, what are practices that are standard? What are practices that are okay but not okay, and things of that nature? So we need develop a cadre of rabbinic figures who have the intimate know-how of what goes on in the business world, can explain, can make a set of courses like Chassar Shmuzin, explaining the basics of what's business, what's really gray to the point of black, and what's totally wrong, and what to do. A person gets his first job, he has no money, and 2 or 3 months into it, he realizes that what he's doing is possibly very wrong, but help, what do I do? So we need to develop really a cadre of rabbanim that can give, quote-unquote, chassar shmuzin, can give a series of practical guidelines and understanding what goes on, what is absolutely appropriate, what is, maybe not mahajin, and what's a lot worse than that.
Interesting. So when it comes to the Choshen Mishpat issues that come up in the workplace, I don't know if you were saying this directly or I'm implying it from what you're saying. If you have a typical Rav that you go to with your Shailas, does that mean that the Rav that you go to for your Adair or a Chaim issues may not be the proper address when you have the Choshen Mishpat issues that come up in the workplace or elsewhere out of the workplace?
Absolutely. First of all, it's another Mikzoh in Torah. The reason why we give Yorah Yorah and we give Yadin Yadin. And besides even someone who knows the Choshen Mishpat as regards the lumdus of it, but what is the reality in the workplace? What goes on? What is considered norm? What is norm but absolutely wrong? What's acceptable? Even someone who's an expert in Choshen Mishpat, if he only learned it as in a safer form, but hasn't had experience with business people, workplace issues, and stuff like that, he may also be totally at a loss to know these things.
So the pool of rabbanim then sounds like it's fairly limited.
I would assume, yes, it would be limited. Ideally would be obviously a rav who had been in business at some point, and is a rav, and now he's doing, so he has actually a first-hand feel of it. But second best would be someone who's had enough cases and involvement where he knows and understands the ins and outs of it. I believe that the pool of people who really will be able to guide somebody would be small, but we must have it.
Interesting. Now, when you go to Rav, and I'll ask the question from the Posek, the Choshen Mishpat Posek's perspective.
Right.
It seems like in the financial area, there are a lot of gray areas. You go and ask.
Correct.
In the olden days, you'd say, is this chicken kosher or not?
Right.
Yes, no. Shabbos, can you open up a bottle? Is there borer on Sfarim? Yes, no. Is it the rice? Is it the rabban? It's a machlokas. But when it comes to the area of Choshen Mishpat, I've seen that when I've had Shailas come up, when people have asked me Shailas, and I've gone to different rabbanim, not that I was asking for myself to form shop and try to find a kula, but I'm just interested in talking about these sugyas with this different poskim, and this posek will say, Usur, Doraisa, terrible. This one will say, Mutter, but not ideal, on the same Shaila. And it seems that when it comes to these financial areas, you'll go to multiple poskim. You shouldn't go. You should say lecharav. But if it seems that there's not as much clarity. So does that mean that the rules are not clear? What's the result?
Right. So you're touching on a very sore point, and there are two or three issues, and unfortunately, one of the resolutions for it is going to be difficult. The first reason is, your day, for instance, deals with chickens. To the best of everybody's knowledge, chickens have looked pretty much the same over the years. So once you have the Dolei HaPosekim, you have Shach Netaz, Prina Kadim, so it's very clear what the chicken is and so on and so forth. Same thing is true about tzitzis and tzilin and davening. The physical object is in place. We now have a sort of mesorah of what's the default psak. And yes, one person got a hashulchan, one got a shulchan, but pretty much it's much more clear, the distinction and the difference of opinions. Choshen Mishpat, the cases are different because what's a corporation, what's a limited liability, what is a SPAC, what's a bond, what's an investment today, considering how the government's regulating it, how do we, there is no pulsate no shach and no tumim and no ketos, and nobody of those pulsates dealt with it. So we now have a whole new set of chickens. We don't have chickens anymore. We have some new bria that we don't have postman with a statue that had finalized and said, this is a kurkav and that with the neck of this is this in the foot. Not, we don't have that. So that's the first problem we have. Secondly, in the nature of dinim mamonis, the variations really make a big difference. You don't have as many variables, not even close, in Yodea or in Arachayim. So that you go with the dayan, in of roles. Those are reasons why Chosh Mishpat to start with is a problematic area, and produces the results you said. But what should happen if let's say we'd have a Klal Yisrael in the way Klal Yisrael should be constructed. An extremely functioning, united community that has a rabbonus, a rabbinical authority that is accepted by everybody. So the way to go would be to enact takanis. Signing a contract is considered a kinyan, or it's not considered a kinyan, one or the other. Any tonight that's made that's not a bnei kofel is considered to be bnei kofel unless whatever. On and on. What you do is, the way that you would do it is, you would a priori set takanas, which you are empowered to do. Municipal entities have the ability halachically to set takanas, and you would avoid the problems by pre-setting takanas. We don't have that, unfortunately. We have zero in terms of the united community, and therefore every Besdin is not bound by any other person. And one person will consider American law Minigam Medina, one will consider it not. One will consider this as a Kenyan, one will consider it not. So now every time you enter any type of contractual relationship, you really don't know what it's going to mean. In American law, and any organized society, you pretty much know what the law is going to be. So this is a really difficult area. The way to resolve it would be if we have a very strong... So, for instance, if let's say the OU would have a membership that would feel bound by Besdin, and they have one flagship Besdin, the RCA, and they would make takanas, that would be binding. I don't know the reality of how many people in that community go to Besdin. I don't know. If our goodness Yisrael were able somehow miraculously to muster together all the major batidinim, and they would set a priori takanis, and so that people know when they go into something what they're going into, that would help alleviate a lot of situations. Right now, the halacha is every business as they see fit, unless there's a takana that's set by an appropriate, halachically, it's a municipality, it's a group, you have a real issue. And there's no easy resolution to it. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Mm-hmm. So what we're left with nowadays is Aseh Lecha Rav, and when issues come up, you go to your local Beis Din if it's a dispute and have them paskin
right.
Based on...
Well, what's appropriate, what could be done and should be done, is to have you write in a contract which Beis Din is going to arbitrate it in Torah. You will both go to Beis Din X or Y or Z. If it's an established Beis Din, you usually have a sense, then they do have a track record. They consider this to be true, exactly true, and so on and so forth. That's somewhat of a remedy to anarchy.
Right, right. Now, that's when we have disputes, but for the standard question that somebody has in the workplace, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Do I have to disclose Geneva Stas? Then we're left with, we go to Posek, who has expertise in Choshen Mishpat, and we
correct.
Have our Shaila there. Okay.
Correct.
So when it comes to all of these issues, if you look in the Gemara, for example, you see 100% hakpada with very little flexibility. For example, there's a Gemara in Tainus that talks about Abba Chilkia was Choni Amagel's grandson, and he was
right.
working in the field, and a couple Talmidei Chachamim were as representatives of Chazal came to him to ask him to pray for rain for Klal Yisrael. He had the same power
right.
of davening for rain as his grandfather, and he didn't even turn around to acknowledge their presence and say Shalom Aleichem to them. And later on in the day, they ask him, why didn't you even say Shalom Aleichem to us? Why were you so unfriendly? And he says, Schir Yom Havi, I was on the clock, I was being paid, and I couldn't use that time up because I was responsible to my employer. And the Gemara
right.
Makos actually calls him Poel Tzedek. That is the honest worker, the ideal worker. And there's a
right.
similar medrash in Shmosh Rabbah that talks about Abba Yosef HaBanai, who was a builder, and he's on the top of a scaffolding. And Avnimos HaGardi, a non-Jewish philosopher, came and asked him a question. And he doesn't turn around. He says, I can speak from you from up here, but I'm a Schir Yom, I'm on the clock, and I can't speak with you right now. I can speak with you, I'm sorry, but I can't come down and have a face-to-face
right.
conversation with you. And in fact, that's how we paskin in the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam is very explicit. He says, you can't steal from your employer, even ma'at bekan u'ma'akan, a little here and a little there, because everything adds up. And he brings Yosef HaTzadik that says, ki b'kol kochi avodati achavichem, I put
right.
my whole effort. And it seems that nowadays, things are a lot laxer. Nowadays,
right.
that people are answering the cell phones for personal use and this and that. And I guess my fundamental question is, how strict do we need to be, and have times changed that we don't have to be as strict as required by the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam and the Gemara?
Right. So the Gemara, for instance, Abba Chilki that you brought, you ask yourself, was that a Midas Hasidus? But the Gemara definitely singles him out as being a Yachid Bedar. And that's why he had the ability to be misfollowed and so on and so forth. So the question is, A, is that the Midas Chassidus? Or is this a getter where, like it says, Kulon Berevak Lashon Hara, it's just impossible to do what's right, but the Metzius is most everybody is somewhat nichshel. So those are two questions to ask about these Gemaras. How much does a person, it certainly should be an ideal. The Gemara presents it as a magnificent ideal. And the Rambam, when he brings it at the end of his halacha, is definitely, he intends to be Musa Shabbo. At the end of the day, the work, the halacha of how much time you can take off would depend on the contractual agreement, which is unconsciously what you expect of normal workers. And so if you expect somebody to handle one or two personal calls a day, and it doesn't, people feel that if the guy feels like a slave, he's not going to be happy. But where is that line pushed or pulled is a difficult question. And that's why my assumption is today, when a person employs somebody else, within reason, the person will give him a little. Doesn't mind if they fill space. Doesn't expect a machine, but at what point does that line crossed? People need to be honest with themselves, and they need to. It's tough because we all have negias. But the leeway is because you assume a normal agreement is sort of monitored by the standard. So the standard is that within a day, a person will take 10, 15 minutes off for private use. That would be acceptable. But people need to ask themselves, do I honestly feel that what I'm doing is actually is honest? Or am I making excuses? You hear the type of thing, well, I work so hard to earn so much money, believe me, even the hour I'm taking off is not enough. Once you start hearing things like that, it's the end of a life.
Right, right. I assume that it also has an impact if the person has set hours. I work 9 to 5 and I'm on the clock, or somebody is working at an investment bank or a law firm or a place that they
right.
just have to complete the work, but they don't have these set hours, so there's
correct.
A little bit more flexibility.
Correct.
Okay. I think what you're saying is just comes to mind is reflected in the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos talks about that somebody who's on the clock cannot say a full Shmon Esrei. He has to daven Havinenu, the shortened. And if you look through the Rishonim, and that's how we pass on the Shulchan Aruch, things have changed because employment standards have changed, and the assumption of the employers when they hire the employees is what would be reasonable, what's based on the industry standard at a given time. So initially, in the postgame, they said, now you can daven the full Shmon Esrei even if you're on the clock, and then it changed to you can even go out to Minyan if it's not going to take you too long, and you can even be the Chazen. So we do see that the Halacha didn't change. The standard changed the same.
The
application, the employment standards was what changed and impacted the Halachas.
Right. Correct.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what we're saying now is the Gemara is likely a Midas Hasidus, Abba Chilkia and Abba Yosef Habanai.
It's either Midas Hasidus or it's the one person who's, it's like if we say the Chachamim didn't speak Lashon Hara, well, it's not a Midas Hasidus in the sense Halacha does obligate us not to speak Lashon Hara, but since the Gemara says this is a type of Avera that everybody's nechshol, the one person who did it right is considered to be the yotzim in haklal. And so I think Mar is definitely singling out Rabbi Chilkia, obviously for good reason. So either midas chasidus or it's so difficult to keep to it that the one person who actually did it is given put on a pedestal for us to look at.
Right. Yeah. I live in Yerushalayim, so we were moving from one street to another, and we used a moving company. And it turned out that one of the movers was from Los Angeles. I'm originally from Los Angeles. So I started speaking to him while he was working. And it's amazing. He says to me, why don't we speak during the break when everyone else is smoking? I don't smoke, and I'll speak to you then. And I was so impressed that effectively I was the boss. I hired that company.
Right.
And he's telling me, I can't speak right now. I'm working right now. Let's wait for my break. So
amazing.
I was very impressed by that. He also, the whole time, he's working back and forth, and he has headphones in. And I thought it was for his phone, if he was on the phone. And then he told me during the break, I said, what are you listening to? He says, well, Pesach is coming. I'm listening to Shiurim to prepare for Pesach, which wasn't interrupting his work at all. So he was able to listen to Shiurim. He wasn't going to take a break to talk to me because that would stop his working. And then we spoke during his break. So there are Abba Chilkias nowadays as well.
I guess Los Angeles produces tzaddikim. That must be the conclusion.
We won't go there. City of the Angels, Los Angeles.
Yes.
So to ask a question, an unfortunate question, in the opposite direction, we see that we have to be careful. There is some flexibility. We build in what would be reasonable industry standard. But unfortunately, we've seen that there have been a number of very public scandals perpetrated by some, at least outwardly observant Jews, oftentimes financial in nature. There's somebody who was telling me that he's in Shiduchim now, and he's been set up. He's been read another of Shiduchim, and when he Googles the families, it's been about 5 or 7 times that he's found that the girl's father is in jail for financial crimes.
Right.
And the question is, in light of the clear, or at least the clear prohibitions in the Torah that they're violating, some things are gray and that has to be hashed out, but not to steal, not to be unfair in business, not to bribe people. Why is this happening?
So I think there are a few reasons that we might be able to do something. First of all, it's much harder to deal with things that are tangible than intangible. You know, the trefa piece of meat is a trefa piece of meat. This hechsher is no good. It's very tangible. So a person has a harder time crossing that line. Chosh Mishpat is conceptual by nature. It's not a piece of something labeled a certain way. So it's much harder to, you don't have that type of restriction. That's one area that I think is problematic. It requires a certain level of dealing with concepts as they were realities. Secondly, there's a chinuch from when you're young. Don't eat this, don't talk to him, davening, get a patch, however you do the chinuch, but it's been reinforced for 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, And that's, you know, we've had that tzinuch. We don't, when someone is growing up, there are not financial issues of you know, integrity. They're not really allowed to get out spending money. I mean, a kid in a dormitory situation or in a shoot that's stealing is a real, it's a psychological issue. So there aren't, we have very little, so we have no practical chinuch. Third of all, in the younger age, when I think a big part of our chinuch is created through stories. So we have a lot of stories about hasmada, if you're Litvish. You have a lot of stories about kedusha, if you're Siddish. You have a lot of stories of tzedakah and being kind. I have a hard time thinking of stories about being honest. And besides having a lot of, besides having stories about it, you also need to translate it. For instance, would there be any books about a hero, a boy or a girl who doesn't do well in school? She or he has a chance to cheat and to get the answers and decides not to. Doesn't do that well on the test, but is very proud of himself or herself. I don't read many children's books. I stopped many years ago. But are there books like that? Are there novel books, stories? If there aren't, and my sense is there are not, we don't build the sense of an honestly achieved accomplishment, whether it's money, grades, covered, is by far more rewarding, satisfying, and better than something that's dishonest. We need to put a lot of effort into creating those stories. There are many whose integrity was, but you need to bring those stories. You need to tell those stories. You need to create a literature that will reinforce it. And you need to talk about it in ways that can speak to the kids. The kids are not going to understand something about a big business deal, but being that we see this as an issue, it has to be built in for the future. That I think are the areas. Those are the things that we're lacking and we need to do. It's taken for granted. Barsham kids are honest. This that, and by and large, in that scenario, there isn't much of it. But then there hasn't been that type of reinforcement you get about sitting in your place when you're davening. How can you talk to somebody else? We don't Hashem. All that type of reinforcement, both positive and negative, hasn't happened. So I think that that's where we need to rethink it and introduce it. At every level, until they reach that stage.
Right. So what I'm hearing is the chinuch we talked about before, the chinuch when somebody leaves Kollel and needing to set up Rabbanim and
right.
Shiurim for this, and now it should start from a very young age, that the chinuch system has to build in the importance of learning Torah, the importance of a good midos, and the importance of ethics and integrity as we raise our children.
Right. That's something that that sense that honesty and emes is the greatest value, and translate it to a child that something honestly earned. I'll share a short story of something that made an incredible impression on me. I have a relative, this is a relative, but his name is Moshe Ganz. He used to be the Mashgiach Shalabim. He's retired. He's a Yid of Hashavi, Talmud Chacham. He's a Magzat Torah for many years. Very, very special person. Really, Ish Emes, the Yashav, the Tam. I don't have to say many Shvachim about him, whoever learned the Shalabim, someone knows him. Their oldest son was born, I think, had some cerebral palsy issue. He limped on a foot. Things were hard for him. He worked very hard to compensate for it, not to get any special breaks because of it. A very, very special kid, Sal. I remember him. And when he was 19, he was waiting in a summit somewhere in the south to get onto the bus. He crossed, the car hit him, and he was killed. And I heard the hesped on him, and one of his rebbeim said that he had given a test, and he looked at the Sal's test, and there was a question like with three or four parts, and it was left blank. He asked him, why didn't you fill it in? He said, I don't know the answer. He said, but, it's a four-part question. I'm sure you could do two or three parts, and at least you get partial credit. And he said, that's not me. If I don't know, I don't want to dray a cup. I don't want to get a piece there. I mean, lo hafif, in Hebrew, the word is hafif. I'm not a drayer. I don't really know it. So if I don't know it, then I should not be getting credit for it. You know, that, those are values that speak, a kid struggles with that. And a kid has to be honest about something he did wrong, about something he didn't do. And we need to build in the sense that the most positive and rewarding religious experience for me is to be emes with myself, to other people, take consequences, but be very, very proud of myself and happy myself that I stood by the emes. That chinuch needs to go in together with everything else.
Right. Wow, that's quite a story.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Rav Lopiansky. Any final words you'd like to say to the audience?
No, I think this is a struggle for everyone. It's a struggle for people in yeshivas. I mean, people running yeshivas, there are tremendous financial challenges. There are always easier ways. Those shilas exist. My father, Zechanah Livracha, who had the Mir Yeshiva on his shoulders, spent most of his time deliberating what he can and what he can't do. He didn't share his thoughts, but as much as a son-in-law could see, a lot of it was spent, is this right, is this not right, can I, should I, is this person think he's doing this? You know, how much are you leading a person on? How honest are you presenting it? Those affect every single person. And yeshivas, because they are financial entities and struggling financial entities, they have the same challenges. So everyone, this is even if you're staying kollel, you need to deal with it. You know, so does Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should give us Siyata Shemaya, and may our generation find the approach and the, you know, the remedy that we need to build in this critical pillar.
Amen. Rav Lopiansky, a pleasure speaking with you.
Because Shpokos Chosim is Emes, so that's the seal of approval.
Amazing. Rav Lopiansky, such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. Kol Tov, Matzlach, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Joining us now is Rav Yitzchak Breidowitz. Rabbi Breidowitz is a world-renowned posek and speaker. He is the senior lecturer at Yeshivas Or Sameach in Yerushalayim. He's the Rav of the Kehila at Or Sameach. And before moving to Yerushalayim, he was a Rav in the United States. He was a professor of law at the University of Maryland.